Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. In a stunning turn of events, Donald Trump has secured a historic third term as President of the United States. Despite fierce opposition and numerous legal challenges, Trump's campaign centred on MAGA, Making America Great Again, resonated with voters nationwide, leading to a decisive victory. Key battleground states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin may flip back to red, showcasing the enduring appeal of Trump's policies on economy, on immigration, law enforcement. His unexpected win has left political analysts scrambling to understand the new dynamics of American politics. As we speak, world leaders are reacting, markets are fluctuating, the political landscape is being redrawn. What does this mean for America's future? What does this mean for the world? We'll have in-depth analysis from our panel of experts, reactions from both sides of the aisle, and what we can expect from a Trump administration with a new mandate. But first up, I'm going to go across to our big wall to give you an idea of what exactly took place in the United States. So let's have the map up to give you an idea of the big divide in the United States. Red translates into Republican states, blue translates into Democrat states, and there are a couple of remaining swing states over here where the results haven't come in as yet. I'm going to explain what swing states are in just a moment from now. By and large, in the context of these elections, the blue bastions, which have been Democratic bastions, they were with the Democrats, they went their way. The red bastions went to the Republicans, as was expected all along. It's just the swing states, and I'm going to come to that in a moment, which have been significant, because the swing states, which are marked in yellow over here, and there are a few more, a couple of them have already gone the way of Donald Trump. And whoever wins those swing states is seen to have a huge advantage. And ultimately, with 280, remember the magic mark in the United States was 270. Donald Trump absolutely ahead, winning the elections in the United States. Now, just a few more details over here. What are the numbers beneath each state? Now, remember, America has what's called a winner-takes-all system. So each state has a certain number of electoral votes. Those electoral votes all add up to the Electoral College. Whoever wins 270 electoral seats, which go towards the Electoral College, wins the elections. In this case, Donald Trump, with 280, has crossed that by an easy margin. So in the case of California, for example, which did go to Democrats, as was expected, there are 54 electoral seats over here, all of them added to the kitty of the Democrats. If you look at Texas with 40 electoral seats over here, all of that added to the kitty of the Republicans. Remember, in America, the popular vote doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the elections. It really depends on how many electoral seats you actually put together to cobble together at least 270 seats. 270 out of 538 to win the elections. However, in this case, not only has Trump won the large number of electoral seats that he requires, or electoral votes, I should say, that he requires, he has also won the popular vote. And through this program, we'll be talking about how that is particularly significant. But while these are the remaining swing states or battleground states which haven't been decided as yet, let's give you an idea of what did take place in some of the other key battleground states. And battleground states or swing states, what has taken place is, in the case of Arizona, just look at this. They've gone by and large to the Republicans. 51% for the Republicans, the Democrats at 47.2. Let's keep shifting as I go through these numbers to tell you what happened in the other ones. In the state of Georgia, 50.8 to Republicans, 48.5 to Democrats. So it is narrow, but even if there's a tiny gap, all of that state goes towards one side. And this has continued. So let's keep flipping the screen. If we go across to the state of Michigan, 51.1% for the Republicans. And let's just continue going with that, Nevada at 51.5%. And now North Carolina with 51.1%. Pennsylvania, a very big win for the Republicans at 50.8%. We'll be talking, in fact, a lot about Pennsylvania in this program, 49.8% for the Republicans in Wisconsin. So the bottom line and the key point that we are trying to mention over here is that these swing states, which have been so very important as far as these elections are concerned, they've all gone, by and large, the way of the Republicans. So that's something that we need to keep in mind very, very closely. But first, here's what Donald Trump had to say after winning these elections.
These are our friends. We have thousands of friends on this incredible movement. This was a movement like nobody's ever seen before. And frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that. We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy? But it's a political victory that our country has never seen before, nothing like this. I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
Well, I'm also joined by my colleague, Gauri Dwivedi. She's had a very, very hectic last couple of days, along with a team of NDTV journalists in the United States. We've been covering the length and breadth of the United States. It's all over, Gauri. We hope you come back now, sooner than later. But it's been fun, no doubt. Give us a sense of what's been happening, talking to friends, talking to people. Are they relieved that it's all over? Or is there still a sense of disbelief, both among Democrats and Republicans, that it's gone so clearly Trump's way?
Itching to come back home, Vishnu, that's for one.
I don't believe
and
you, but
secondly,
go right ahead.
The last couple of days, I did speak to I spoke to a bunch of people, and all of them are, first of all, relieved that this has ended. There were lots of concerns that will the election night actually end, or will there be a bunch of litigation that could drag the entire process? So to that extent, there is relief on both sides. That, and of course, for the voters and people at large, that this has ended. Secondly, going into this election, the one thing that one heard again and again was, and a lot of Trump voters said that, and something that probably reflected in the results as well, they said that, you know, when it comes to the Democrats and the Democrat voters, they're very vocal about their criticism, critique of Donald Trump. But the Republican voters, they said that they are more subdued. They don't want to come out lashing against Kamala Harris per se. It's just that they weren't convinced that she could actually do a better job as far as the economy is concerned. As for Washington, D.C. here, it is going to be blue, Vishnu, till 19th of January. And it turns a darker shade of red only on the 20th of January. But interestingly, the next 45 to 50 days will be spent, of course, figuring out the key appointments and, most importantly, what lies ahead in a presidency which will be extremely powerful with the Senate under control. House, the Congress is a toss-up right now, but could go the Republican way. And, of course, Donald Trump winning both the popular vote and the Electoral College, Supreme Court under his belt. So who knows, some of those big contentious things that he's spoken about, immigration and a couple of others, he could actually get some of those really contentious legislations going.
All right, Gauri, I'm just going to introduce our panel. We've got Richard Painter, law professor at the University of Minnesota. Ambassador Atul Keshab will be with us in a little while, president of the U.S.-India Business Council, one of the most influential American diplomats who served in India in the past. We've got Professor Dan Cassino, professor of government and politics from Farley Dickinson University. Clifford Young, president of Ipsos Public Affairs in the United States. The Ipsos polls have been fairly interesting. Dhruva Jayashankar joins us, as well as also Dr. Bharat Barai, chairperson of the U.S.-India Community Foundation. Richard Painter, let me come to you first. Just in terms of the larger picture over here, over 51% of the vote for Donald Trump is equal to Obama's second-term win. It's the first time that we've got a Republican president since George W. Bush in 2004 to secure the popular vote. In terms of the magnitude of this win for the Republicans, what does it mean for the party?
Well, this is an election that turned largely on the economy. Is the number one issue, particularly in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, critically important states that used to be toss-up states or sometimes in the Democratic column. The economy is a challenge, particularly in states that used to have a robust manufacturing sector that do no longer. And Donald Trump has appealed to those voters. Who are concerned about being left behind in the economy. Now, whether he's actually going to do anything to help them, we'll see. He has another 4 years now in the White House to work with Congress to actually make good on his campaign promises. But that's what this is all about. And it's a famous saying from James Carville, the Democratic strategist who helped Bill Clinton win back in 1992, said, "It's the economy, stupid." Well, unfortunately, I think the Democrats have spent a lot of time talking about social issues particularly divisive social issues and have not focused on the economy. And working voters, particularly people with lower wages, feel very frustrated about that. And if people who are earning lower wages aren't willing to vote for Democrats, the Democrats are in trouble.
Indeed. Vishnu, if I can get Ambassador Keshab on the fact that the next 4 years in terms of the India-U.S. Relationship, given the backdrop of the fact that Donald Trump has been very clear in terms of tariffs and also on immigration, both of which actually directly impact India.
Well, thank you very much. And look, I'd like to refer to what the previous panelists just discussed about the economy. You know, clearly the voters sent a very strong message. The president-elect has a clear mandate, and it is focused on the well-being and happiness of the American people. So the critical issue for U.S.-India relations is whether Delhi and Washington can have a discussion that validates each other's perspectives and particularly understands the message being sent by the American people. I have full confidence that there can be a lot of ambition in U.S.-India relations. President Trump is a deal maker, and there was some work on a landmark trade agreement between the U.S. and India during the last days of Trump 1. I hope that they could pick that up and go forward. Certainly, tariffs are in the mix. The president-elect has been very clear about that. But this is where countries like India, friends and partners, should understand where the American people are coming from and the message that they have sent about the economy. I do see opportunity for a deal, though.
Ambassador Keshab, I'll come back to the India story in just a moment. But, you know, as an experienced diplomat, I just wanted to quickly get your views in on what's happening in Europe, the war over there, the fact that we've got Trump. Zelensky, obviously concerned. He needs American support and, you know, the provision of weaponry, the provision of funds. Do you believe that there'd be a change in American policy, your personal view?
Well, let's see what happens. You know, I always say personnel is policy. Let's see whom the president-elect picks for his team, and then we can see what the policies may look like. But President Trump campaigned on strengthening America, addressing the economy, and ending wars around the world. Now, I wish him the best of success in that. These wars are terrible. They've been terrible for the countries affected, particularly for Ukraine. And I think a strong America ensures deterrence that makes our adversaries think twice. And in that regard, a strong America is good for us, but it's also good for the Indian people, because democracies need to have a strong deterrent capability. And part of that starts with having a strength at home and a strong and running economy at home.
Ambassador Keshav, you've always worked on and seen firsthand that very close camaraderie, in a sense, between Prime Minister Modi and the U.S. President. There was that huge Howdy Modi event I remember attending in Ahmedabad, a lot of support over here for him. Does that, at the end of the day, really make a difference in relations between America and India? Do you believe that that could be a small factor as well as the relationship goes forward?
Yes. Obviously, nations have long-term strategic and economic interests. They also have their long-term values. But personality and chemistry absolutely matters. And President Trump and Prime Minister Modi enjoy a superb relationship, one that has been tested by things like the Galwan crisis, where America and India worked very closely together. So there's not only a strategic congruity, but there's also a very clear chemistry that will be helpful. There does need to be some discussion about some of America's perspectives about imbalanced trade. And I think that if Delhi can address that in a useful way, there could be some really good breakthroughs in taking U.S.-India relations to the next level.
Indeed. And in fact, taking on from the fact about trade being a key area of focus, I want to ask this to Mr. Richard, in fact, that what do you think could be the key focus areas for the Trump administration 2.0? And the reason why I ask that is that he's going to be an extremely powerful president. He'll be able to pass through some very important legislation, even if they are extremely contentious. Even if you just take the immigration part, all reports suggest that it could take $88 billion of American taxpayer money to send 1 million immigrants back. That also impacts India. But the question I want to ask you is that do you see some of this actually passing through, or do you think that was election rhetoric and the administration will have to decide between what's feasible and what's just not possible?
Well, I think that some of it's election rhetoric and will not happen, particularly mass deportations. I do not expect that. What I do expect is some contentious discussions about tariffs and trade. And I'm hoping that the Trump administration will recognize that growing the economy of the United States as the second largest democracy in the world and India is the largest democracy in the world together in a partnership will be very, very important, not only for the economic growth of both countries, but also to have a strong posture against China. Of course, we are flooded with imports from China that are undermining American workers, but also China is not a democracy. And I believe ultimately, as a national security issue, China is the big worry for the Trump administration. And the strong economic alliance with India is going to be very, very important. And that means a reasonable posture on tariffs so that we can grow both countries' economies together as well as have a strategic relationship.
Professor Dan Cassino, I just wanted to focus on, what the Democrat rhetoric against Trump has been and the fact that he's defeated it all. Firstly, he's the first twice impeached U.S. president. He's the first convicted person to become a U.S. president. He'll be becoming U.S. president. All of this evidently didn't matter at all to U.S. voters. They aren't concerned, quite clearly, the large majority, about the fact that he faces so many charges. Now, many of these might be wiped away when he becomes president, but is it not interesting and significant that his background, his criminal background in some cases, wasn't a showstopper for Trump?
You have to remember that American voters are very good at what we call retrospective voting. They are voting largely on the basis of what's happened in the past. Not so much with prospective voting, that is voting on the basis of what they think is going to happen in the future. I think what we're seeing is a rejection of the status quo. Former President Trump, President-elect Trump, was a messenger for we're going to reject the status quo. But the votes, I think, should be seen more as a rejection of how people perceive the economy under Biden, inflation and unaffordable housing, rather than an acceptance or support for what former President Trump has done. So it's not about, they like it or they think it's great. Rather, it's that they don't like what's going on now. And when you don't like what's going on now, you vote against the party that's in power.
Okay. Gauri?
Right. Vishnu, do we have Jyotsna with us?
Jyotsna is there with us. Go ahead, Gauri, with your question to Jyotsna.
Okay, great. Jyotsna, I want to ask you this, and I'm sure, you know, Bishnu will, over the course of the show, talk more about the Indian-American connection. But I want to ask you that how significant do you think Indian-Americans could be in a Trump 2.2 administration? The reason I ask is that from drawing room to polling booth, everywhere the conversation regarding Donald Trump came down to his Diwali greeting and how he reached out to the Indian-American and particularly the Hindu community. In the backdrop of that, how significant do you think this demographic will be in his next administration?
Thank you. Vishnu and Gauri. See, I'll tell you, when we speak about the Diwali celebration, if I trace it back to 2022, President Trump, along with Shalab Kumar, the founder of Republican Hindu Coalition, they hosted a Diwali at Mar-a-Lago at his own residence. It was a very historic day. That was the first time when we were chanting 2024, you know, 2024 for Trump. And maybe he was still making his mind then that whether he would be wanting to contest the election in 24 or not. That was the day when Trump spoke to the, you know, the executives of Republican Hindu Coalition there, 183 people over there. I was also amongst them. In fact, I was the master of ceremony of that event that day. And Trump shows warmth to Indians. In fact, while doing the diya lighting, it was more of a, you know, passion he has about the religious thing. Even Hindus do, in fact, lighting up the diya, the lamp, he really likes doing it. So it was a very small, you know, thing I'm quoting. The thing is, he considers the Indian Americans, or Hindus also, to be more precise, as part of his team. Republican Hindu Coalition founder President Shalab Kumar, in 2016, when Trump was a candidate, he was the first one to endorse him.
Right.
And I pretty well, you know who Shalab Kumar is, right? And how he has come along with him. Of course, in 2020, then there was a gap when Trump did not bring in Shalab there to his campaign. 2022 started off again, and there, afterwards, you know, he contemplated, you know, fighting for the elections. Then Vivek Ramaswamy came into the picture, again, another Indian-American with his roots very strong. And Vivek Ramaswamy dropped, and he started supporting him.
Right. Jyotsna, I'm going to come back to you in just a moment. Sure. I take the point, and Bharat Barai is with us as well to talk. Yeah. About that. But I wanted to go across first to Clifford Young, president of Ipsos Public Affairs in the United States. Mr. Young, you know, polls get it right, or get it wrong, I should suggest, quite frequently. It does happen sometimes. It goes right. We have this huge problem in India where exit polls, for example, or you know, have had disastrous results in our general elections. They've almost all been inaccurate. Now, in the case of the United States, would you agree that the polls, by and large, were way off the mark, that, in fact, the margin of victory for Trump was something that the large number of polls didn't predict at all?
It's been a long night, right? And so ultimately, let's wait a bit. We need to wait a few days to get all the tally of the votes in. Let's make sure we have everything there so we can ultimately see how the polls ultimately performed. I think when it's all said and done, whether at the national level or in the swing states, the polls will be on average off about 2 points, underestimating Trump. We seem to do that election over election. We did that in 2016 and 2020. So it's close. And obviously, we'll have to find out. But my bigger criticism is actually the narrative that the polls set. And so we went into the night thinking that this would be a contested election, perhaps a Trump election. I think many of us thought that Trump had the upper hand. But really, this night was one where Trump dominated. I think on that point, the polls did not do a good job of helping set up the narrative. So at the end of the day, I think we're going to find it's close. But that said, the narrative was off.
Right. Dhruva Jayashankar is also with us. Dhruva, we spoke on the eve of the election, and the one thing that all of us were talking that evening was how close it was. But it isn't, the results don't seem to indicate that. Your sense of what really swung the election in favor of Trump, or a fact that many sort of an issue that many overlooked?
Right. So, you know, a lot of things in the last 12 hours are being said retrospectively. The fact is, we don't know. I think people will be poring over the data on elections for days, weeks, months to come. I think a few factors. I think, as Cliff Young suggested, the outcome itself was not surprising. It was well within the realm of possibility that Trump would win. I think the margin of victory has really been a big surprise. The fact that he's up by 5 million votes in the popular vote, I think, is not something that was expected. And that it's really across demographics. It's across states and Democratic strongholds. He's done better even when he lost the state. So it's really what this signals is really a very widespread sentiment and what might be characterized as a protest vote against the establishment of the Democratic Party. Now, there are many reasons we could look into it. And I think once people pore over the numbers, they'll see, is it because Harris underperformed and the Democrats underperformed, or is it because Trump overperformed, or a combination of those? Is it more economic issues? Is it the semblance? Is it pocketbook issues that have affected average voters or their sense of the economy, even though the macro numbers seem to be very strong? Is it cultural issues? Is it foreign policy issues? Again, there's some evidence already in Michigan and other places that certainly played a role. Or was it some combination thereof? And my suspicion is because that almost every demographic, with the exception, I think, of college-educated women, white women, voted more in favor of Trump than they did 4 or 8 years ago, that this suggests a very widespread dissatisfaction with the status quo and perhaps an all-of-the-above explanation.
Sure. Dr. Bharat Barai is among the foremost, Americans of Indian origin. He's been a doctor for decades. He works very closely with the Indian community over there, extremely influential. Wonderful to have you, Dr. Bharat Barai, with us on the program. You've been following and tracking the progress of Indian politicians in the U.S. very closely, those running this time around as well. How well have Democrats or Republicans of Indian origin done?
Thank you, Vishnu and Gauri. The Indian Americans have done very well. In fact, I should share with you that Mr. Suhas Subramaniam will be the sixth Indian-American congressman in the new Congress. And right now, Dr. Amit Shah from 1st District of Arizona, he is leading, but it's a small margin and only 56% of the votes are counted. So, well, let's say if he becomes the seventh U.S. congressman of Indian-American origin. So we have done very well. Politically also, we have been very active. And a lot of things happened in last 2 weeks, talking with candidate Trump about the concerns of the Hindu community. I would not go into all the details, but ultimately we requested that a strong statement be issued on behalf of the Hindu community of Bangladesh that was being tortured and the Hindu temples that were being desecrated in Bangladesh. And he was more than willing to do it. And I think it did swing quite a few. You know, many, many of the friends that I talked to in USA, they all said, oh, wow, Trump did it. He gets my vote. The other thing that did not help Democrats inviting the Khalistanis at the White House 2 days before Prime Minister Modi's visit for the Quad. And I think, Vishnu, we talked about it in New York when you were covering the Prime Minister's visit. There were a lot of people who were very pissed off saying that all these people are desecrating Hindu temples. They desecrated Mahatma Gandhi's statue in front of Indian embassy. They tried to preach separatist propaganda. They tried to post videos saying that the Air India airliner will be damaged or desecrated or bombed. And so White House sent a lot of wrong messages to the Indian American community. There was also a lot of effect on the Jewish community. There are many Jewish friends who were very much unhappy that Biden administration tried to put an embargo on some of the arms shipment to Israel when they were fighting the terrorist. So I think different groups acted in their own way, being unhappy. And ultimately, that showed up in the votes.
Yeah, it did.
Surprisingly,
indeed.
I should say, the Pakistani community, they also sided with Trump, And now there is a division among them, those who are for the present government and those who are for Imran Khan.
Right. I just wanted to go back to Ambassador Atul Keshab, who's been waiting. Ambassador Keshab, correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense is that the primary foreign policy agenda of President Trump over a period of time, assuming the wars do come to an end sooner than later, will be China. And again, I would suggest that it's that confluence of thinking between New Delhi and Washington on the challenges and opportunities that China has that would be an area where both sides would actually talk about. India is focusing on the Asia-Pacific more than we have in the past. America certainly is. Do you believe that the China factor, for positive reasons and perhaps because of concerns, would dominate the relationship?
Well, look, let me go back to the Trump 1 term, which was greatly impacted by the pandemic. I was working intimately on China policy back then, and of course, it had such an impact on the American people. I can't speak for President Trump or for what the new administration will do, but what I can say is that they absolutely want to ensure that the United States of America and its people are indemnified from the risk of excessive exposure to anything that might impact our happiness and health and well-being. So that means that countries like India are actually very important because India is a trusted country. India and the United States share the same concerns about supply chain exposures and risks. And we, of course, have the Quad commonality and the Indo-Pacific shared perspective. So I think there's actually not only going to be a very heavy focus on China for all the reasons you mentioned, but there's also going to be a focus on how India fits into all of that. And we have a relationship with India that stands on its own. It is very strong in terms of people to people. There are almost 5 million Indian Americans in this country. They play an outsized role in the political life of this country and in so many other fields of endeavor. And I think President Trump knows that. The people around him know that. They're very focused on how they can take the U.S.-India relationship to the next level. And so the challenge for Delhi and Washington as we go forward is to see what that should be. Obviously, the strategic underpinnings are important, economic, technology. I would say let's be ambitious. Let's focus on real trade agreements that unleash even more prosperity for our people, because it will help strengthen our deterrent, our shared deterrence, and will help manage the problems that you mentioned.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Ambassador Keshab, and I'd like to thank all our guests very much for being with us. We're going to take a short break at this stage and come back with a lot more. Gauri, I'll come back to you later on. You've got a lot more programming this evening, but we will take a short break and then tell our viewers once again what the overall story is. Let's listen into what Trump has to say. We'll be doing that after a short break and a lot more analysis on what's been a fabulously interesting day in American politics and election that's being watched around the world. Welcome back. Incredible elections in the United States, 280 to 224 for Harris. Donald Trump is going to return. He's going to be a two-time president of the United States. Whoever thought that the election results were going to be as clear-cut as they are at this stage? Kamala Harris and the Democrats nowhere in the picture. But let's listen in to what the man of the moment has had to say.
These are our friends. We have thousands of friends in this incredible movement. This was a movement like nobody's ever seen before. And frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country, and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that. We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy? But it's a political victory that our country has never seen before, nothing like this. I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
All right, so let's just explain what has happened in the United States by a quick look at a couple of details which we've been working on. This actually reflects the actual results. In a couple of states, those haven't been formalized as yet. So now, typically, the blue states are the bastion of the Democrats. The red state are strong. Red colors are states which are strongholds of the Republicans. We've written remaining swing states, and that's because a couple of the swing states, in fact, many of them have gone to the Republicans, which is why they've won the elections. But a couple of them are still remaining. We're still waiting to formalize the results. So those haven't been called as yet, four of them at this present moment. But the numbers underneath every state are those of electoral votes. Ultimately, all of the electoral votes add up towards the Electoral College. Whoever wins 270 electoral votes ends up becoming the next president. That party does win. Now, in a winner-takes-all situation, which is what the U.S. elections are all about, let me give you two examples. Firstly, the example of California, where there are 54 electoral seats. Let's take a look at Texas with 40. So whoever wins this state, right, California as an example, all of those 54 seats get transferred to the Electoral College. And so that magic mark is 270, Donald Trump with 280, quite clearly above that. All of this is important because in the context of the United States, the popular vote doesn't necessarily translate into a person becoming the president. It's the overall count of the electoral seats in every state which actually adds up. In fact, there have been examples in the past, for example, in the case of Hillary Clinton, where she had the popular vote. More people actually voted for her, but because of the way the U.S. election system is set up, she didn't win the elections. Let's take a look at the swing states. Now, the swing states are important. We're going to go by these numbers one after the other. This is where Trump has done very well. In the state of Arizona, 51.9% of people wanted Trump, which is why he's got the 11 electoral votes from this state. Let's just keep going through one after the other. In Georgia, the Republicans at 50.8. Again, Kamala Harris would have wanted to have done much better. The state of Michigan on your screens right now, 51.1% for the Republicans. In Nevada, 51.5% for the Republicans. The Democrats at 46.8%. North Carolina, 51.1% for the Republicans. The Democrats, 47.7%. Pennsylvania, absolutely fascinating in many senses. If the Democrats had any serious chance, Pennsylvania, so very important. But just look at this. Pennsylvania voting for the Republicans, the Democrats at just 48.2. So this gives you an idea of what exactly has taken place. Finally, in Wisconsin, 49.8. So neck and neck almost. But again, the Republicans coming up on top. I'm just going to go across now to my colleague, Natasha Israni, who's been tracking these elections very, very closely, indeed with me in the United States. In fact, she's been covering Pennsylvania itself. And if you just focus, on Pennsylvania itself, is this, at the end of the day, a bit of a surprise? Because the sense is it could have most likely gone the way of Kamala Harris, and if not, it would have been extremely close. It's not really that close this time around.
No, certainly not, Vishnu. It is not close. In the two presidential cycles, the difference between the candidates was either 0.5% or little over 1%. But this is much higher. So it's a very definitive and clear victory for Trump in this crucial state where I'm standing right now. I'm actually standing at the rocky steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, which is also where Kamala Harris held her last rally with all her superstars and celebrities and talking about unity. But that message, which was resonating across the country, has many shades of gray and nuances to it, as I could make out even talking to people on the street. Let me give you some examples from Philadelphia, the city that we're spending a lot of time in. And I want to profile, interestingly, two Uber drivers that we drove with, just to again give you a perspective from the ground. The first Uber driver that we spoke to, the young man who couldn't afford his rent. Now, he lives in Philadelphia, a crowded city, and he was going for Trump. Now, Philadelphia is predominantly blue, but he was breaking ranks and going for Trump because he couldn't afford his rent. And he also wants to stop the wars in the Middle East, and he thinks Trump will not spend money on wars. That's his perception. Another Uber driver, completely different profile, a white woman, young again, and she also went for Trump. And I asked her, actually, about reproductive rights and how she felt about that and the overturning of the Roe versus Wade. And she was very clear in her outlook to us, saying that she felt these are decisions made by the state and she still trusted Trump overall with women's issues. And also for her, just like men and many other ethnicities in the United States, it has come down to the pocketbook. She was concerned about her wallet and she just trusts Trump more with that, as she told us, over Kamala Harris. So this is Philadelphia, predominantly blue, and we were still meeting a lot of people who voted for Trump. And when it comes to the state, it's such a large state. It's made of these huge cities, but also very industrial areas, also rural areas, a lot of farmland. And then fracking was another big issue, whether to frack or not. So yes, Pennsylvania going for Trump is really something that helped change the game for him.
All right, Natasha, be with us. I'm just going to introduce our panelists. Alex Zidane, Republican political strategist with us. Professor Dan Cassino, Richard Rosso, and Dr. Bharat Barai still with us. Mr. Rosso, let me come to you first. So the White House goes to the Republicans. The Senate goes to the Republicans. The Supreme Court is already with the Republicans. Congress with the Republicans as well. In a couple of months from now, the very face of America and American politics seems to have been decided in one direction. And what is that direction? I mean, what would it mean for millions in the United States with such an overwhelming Republican presence?
Well, I think we know what the aspirations are that Republicans are able to appeal to. I come from a state of Michigan where you've seen deindustrialization, a lot of people kind of wondering what the future means, concerns about trade, concerns about immigration, job losses. So the hope is that, putting a different party, to be able to carry all these offices simultaneously, you can actually have concerted policy efforts that can bring a lot of those jobs back home, restore American manufacturing, improve what we see in innovation. But also, I think some areas on stepping up, as we saw during the last Trump administration, with some of the strategic threats that we see from China. And part of that also involves reshoring manufacturing and being more competitive in emerging technology areas. So I think that as long as they feel that some of this can be brought back, that these opportunities are brought back to the homeland, I think a lot of people are going to get excited about it. So we'll see what policies are going to flow from it.
Dr. Bharat Barai, and let me put you on the spot, Dr. Barai, a tough question. You know, when it comes to abortion, the fact that, as a medical practitioner yourself, you would understand that there are circumstances when an abortion becomes a medical requirement, number one. Number two, there is the entire issue of a woman's reproductive rights. It's a freedom of choice. It's a human right as well, one would suggest. But with Trump coming back into power, there is a sense that what if there is a nationwide abortion ban? How would you, as a doctor, look at that? Would it not be a huge concern for you?
The answer is yes, and I don't support that part of the Republican plank. But let me explain, Vishnu, what the Supreme Court did is, instead of declaring it as a federal right or fundamental right, they pitched it to the states. So it is the state legislature that decides what should be the stand of the state for the abortion. So almost half the states in USA, still abortion is legal, like New York, California, Illinois. But there are conservative states where they have ruled different kinds of things for abortion. You cannot do it after this many weeks or after this much condition. But I agree that the reproductive life is an important thing for many women, and it should be respected both as a medical practitioner as well as human being. Now, interestingly, Trump had said during his campaign, without saying specifically, that, oh, the women will not have to worry about abortion. Now, what did he mean by that? He did not clarify. So it will be interesting to see what ultimately he does. Now, if the Congress is controlled by all three same party, we know that Senate will be controlled by them, but they have so far only 52 votes. So if they try to bring some legislation to try to make a federal ban on abortions, then there will be a lot of resistance, and they might invoke filibuster in the Senate where it requires 60 votes rather than majority vote. So the chances of such a legislation passing, I would consider very remote, but there will be some people who will try to play around with it, and that will create some dissensions. Certainly, the American Medical Association and the medical community strongly supports women's right to choose their reproductive choices.
So let me come to you next. The fact that many suggest that Trump ran a really negative campaign in terms of his vocabulary, his language, his aggression, the fact that he's got a criminal record, a lot of negatives which people have pointed out. I won't repeat all of them. It just seems that in America, people haven't really cared very much. That's never been a factor. Whereas some would suggest that the Democrat campaign was on almost exclusively ensuring that the core concept of democracy was protected in the way that it's been perhaps in the past. Does this election, in a sense, define a new America, a new vision of what democracy and freedom in America can actually mean?
Well, it's certainly a new coalition, Vishnu. That's something that we've seen since these results started coming in last night. The working class, non-college educated, hardworking, blue-collar people are Republicans now. They are. That coalition that the Democrats put together dating back from the Great Depression has crumbled. It's crumbled because of the new divide between those who have college degrees, who mostly vote Democrat, and those who don't have college degrees or have college degrees like me and know that they're no substitute for real world experience. They vote Republican. That's going to be our new paradigm going forward. And it's really impressive to see President Trump's success among Black men, his success among Latinos, his success among Muslims. The Democratic Party took those demographics for granted for far too long. And last night, they were bitten back because of what they've done over the past few decades.
Professor Dan Cassino, what does this mean for the Democrats?
Well, the Democratic Party is going to have to try and figure out what it means going forward. So I think the other guest is absolutely correct that we are seeing a realignment in American politics. I think it's actually less about education, much more about traditionalism. You know, this idea of traditional masculinity, you know, who's supposed to be in charge, traditional hierarchies of power. And the Democratic Party has been on the side of kind of tearing down or mitigating those hierarchies. And the Republican Party has been on the side of propping those hierarchies up. So the question going forward for the Democrats is, what can we do to appeal to people who are scared? Men who do feel, as about half of men in the United States do, that they've discriminated against because of their sex. And that includes African-American Latino men. African-American men still win for Harris, but we did see Latino men narrowly supporting Trump in this election. So the old racial coalitions have fallen apart, and the Democrats need to figure out what do they need to do in order to turn out their voters and reclaim support from the groups that they, in theory, can still win.
Richard Russo, is it your sense that the Democrats left the pick of Kamala Harris too late in the day, that perhaps voters needed to have seen more of Kamala Harris before Biden was persuaded to not contest in the next elections?
You know, I think they were left with a difficult choice. They had to really cut ties with Biden, have him hand over the torch, and Kamala Harris, the reasons for choosing. She was the next best candidate in line there. She had a moment there where she was crawling ahead in the polls, and she had a pretty good run, I think, in the first few weeks. But, you know, then she just couldn't deliver a message, I think, as the previous guests have said, that resonated with a lot of, you know, Americans in the Midwest that, again, feel that the Democratic Party sometimes has abandoned a lot of the issues that they care about. So I don't think the pick was too late necessarily, because you did see a moment there when she had some momentum and had a bit of a lead in some of the swing states. But she just couldn't deliver messages, I think, that resonated. And you began to see the air leaving the balloon pretty quickly thereafter.
All right. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. As I wrap up this program, I just wanted to go back to my colleague, Natasha Israni, once again. Natasha, you've been traveling across the country, tracking these elections. What in your mind was something definitive that you saw which perhaps gave you an indicator of which way this election was headed?
Well, I started noticing, you know, with all this talk about a close race, I started having some doubts when actually I was in the Queens neighborhood of New York City. Now, Queens is full of immigrants. About 47% of immigrants there are born outside the United States. So heavily blue. And even in that heavily blue immigrant area, I heard from this young man who was voting for Trump and a middle-aged woman who was also voting for Trump. And what she said was interesting to me. She thought that crime in New York City, in neighborhoods across the country, would be better dealt with. Her perception was that Donald Trump would deal with it better than Kamala Harris. So when you also talk about traditional masculinity, it's not just on the men's side, where another young man that we spoke to in Philadelphia yesterday saying that he thought, this young white male man, he thought that he was becoming the minority in this country, that nobody was looking at him and his issues, not just the economy, other things as well. And it's not just him, though. Women were saying that as well. So that's when I really started wondering how close this race was. And of course, I'm not a poll pundit or an analyst. I'm a reporter on the ground. But that carried with us as we spoke to people, not just in New York, but also New Jersey, as well as Pennsylvania. And also a lot of voters talking about the juggler, saying that there were things that they didn't agree with on Trump, the way he speaks about women, the way he speaks about immigrants, the rhetoric that he uses. And even though many of them found it harsh and divisive, they still felt that he was going to be better for them, for their day-to-day life. And we talk a lot about this is about the economy, stupid, but it's actually more than that. It was also their concern about wars abroad that they feel that he will end. And also transgender issues. A woman told us that she didn't like the fact that transgenders would be allowed to she didn't have a problem with them personally, but she didn't want them playing female sports. So these issues were also in play, marginal, but yes, a factor too.
All right, Natasha, great job having you over there along with a team of NDTV reporters. Thank you very much indeed. So a fantastic, fantastic election result in the United States. Whichever way, if you are interested in politics and where America votes, it's been fascinating, absolutely. If you're a Democrat supporter, a huge disappointment. The future of the Democrat Party, at least in the immediate run, would need to be looked at very, very closely. In India, we keep using the word introspection. Whenever one political party loses the election, it does appear that the Democrats are in serious trouble. But they remain in power for the next couple of months. It's going to be a couple of months before Trump does come into power. But what will the next 4 years or so really hold for not just the United States, but the world? We'll have to wait and see. For the moment, from all of us here on the Left, Right and Center team, good night.